Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, the Legacy and Faith Show featuring estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. Once again, hi, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, this week talking about an exciting subject, but actually a very important one, and that is the subject of the power of attorney clause. We see this a lot of times in wills, but it applies in many situations.
Yeah, and where powers of attorney come in are our will or our trust are often designed to be death documents. Mm-hmm. And these powers of attorney now are the living documents. So in other words, how am I taken care of during my lifetime? So this is a really big issue,
actually.
Because through the aging process, we'll have different events take place in our life. And the power of attorney is the document that is the backstop to ensure that we are well taken care of. So mm-hmm. they're the expression of, if I'm experiencing difficulty through this aging process, who has authority? What do I want them to mm-hmm. do with that authority so that I can be well taken care of? And here's even a bigger issue sometimes that is highly neglected in most documents I review, which is, how do I want my family members to be taken care of if I can no longer make the decisions? Hmm. And so most powers of attorney do a reasonable job at making instructions for the one who needs the assistance, but it is highly neglected about that they have a spouse who needs assistance, or they have mm-hmm. children who need assistance, or they care for other people. So power of attorneys are utilized during the time when we can no longer take care of ourselves, versus the will and most trusts are the disposition instrument, which happens at death.
Yeah, and the person in those, you always hear the term is the executor of the will. So this is different from that.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Power of attorneys have agents. And so an agent is to take care of what we call the principal. The principal is the individual who develops the document. Mm-hmm. They're the one who executed it. And supposedly, they're the one who actually put the instructions in the document.
Okay.
And so we get into a little bit of difficulty in the law, which is that the law assumes that the principal, the one who executed the document, has actually reviewed this and approves of everything. Mm. And so getting a document off of a website, getting one online, and many times even putting that full faith and trust in your attorney without reviewing the document could potentially be a minor trap, because there are things in these documents that the law will assume you're the one who signed it, so you're the one who must have reviewed this in totality. Mm. And so these instructions then really play out, agent, this is what your duty is, and this is what you can and can't do. And these are the boundaries by which you're going to play and take care of both my finances and my health. And so this is very different than the will and for most trusts. And let me say something really quick, is that I keep referring to most trusts. So in a trust that I create, we do a lot of expression about what happens if someone becomes incapacitated or disabled. Mm-hmm. So, but unfortunately, most trusts that I review don't take that step of being expressionate in the disability stage. Mm. So that's why I'm referring to trust as being more of a death document. So it shouldn't be, but that's unfortunately what we get a lot. Mm. So therefore, the executor, the personal representative, is indicative of death, versus the agent is indicative of when we're alive.
What about the term I hear a lot too, durable power of attorney? Is
right.
that something different, or is that just more descriptive of the power of attorney role?
Yeah, a durable power of attorney is one that will not end. So in other words, powers of attorney can have different events that say, at this event, this power of attorney ends. So let me give you a brief example. Okay. If I was selling a home, but I needed assistance because I was going to be out of the country, or I was moving permanently, even though today with electronic means, it has become much easier, but specifically in times past when you actually had to sign the document, it may have been a better decision to put someone else in charge or having the authority to help me sell my house. So in that type of a power of attorney, there would have been a very, very limited scope of why I wanted the assistance. So that would have not given authority over all of my bank accounts, over my investments and everything else. It would have been designed just to sell my house. Mm. So in that instance, we're not going to use a durable clause because it must end as soon as the event is over, which was selling my house.
I see.
The durable part is if I become incapacitated, in other words, I've created this document and I want it to be durable. I want it to last beyond the ability of me to change it. So therefore, I don't want anything to end this document. It is intended to cover me, even if I can no longer use my voice.
Okay. Well, what other types of power of attorney are needed? We've mentioned the durable power of attorney. What other kinds are there?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few by Washington law that I personally create that I don't like to mix. So the most common are a financial power of attorney and a healthcare power of attorney.
Okay.
So let's start there in simplicity. Okay. The financial does exactly what you think, but probably a little bit more mm-hmm. as well. The financial power of attorney is utilized to manage your finances. So anything that is in your personal name now needs a representative to act on your behalf. So if I had a bank account and I was unable to gain access to my account due to mental incapacitation or for a period of time because I'm recovering from a surgery or whatever the case may or may not be, I need someone else to represent me at my financial institution. Mm. So therefore, the financial power of attorney would give them access and authority as if they were me over that account. So financial, we think of things such as bank accounts, IRAs, investment funds, our home, life insurance policies, vehicles. All of those things would fall under the financial power of attorney because there is a value attached to them. But it goes a little bit further as well. It also includes things that are attached to my own name, so such as a credit card needing to be canceled. If I no longer needed a credit card, someone has to be able to act on my behalf because that credit card is in my personal name. So therefore, my personal name is empowered to somebody else. So a credit card. If I needed to sign documents for governmental use, so if I needed to apply for Medicaid, what if I had to apply for Medicare or do an annual tax return? All of these things require my personal signature. But if I was experiencing a difficulty in life to where I was unable to manage those things on my own behalf, someone has to step up to the plate and act as Paul Grant. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's what the financial power of attorney does, is it allows someone to say, I have all the authority of Paul, so therefore I can act as if he was the one acting. Mm-hmm. So there is a financial power of attorney. And that durable part, kind of going back to what you asked, Mark, mm-hmm. was, therefore, if I'm incapacitated or I created it when I'm competent, now I'm no longer, the durable says, I'm going to jump that fence and it's going to continue. Mm. Now, a medical power of attorney, very intuitive of exactly what you think it is, mm-hmm. which is if I can no longer communicate to a doctor. Then what procedures do I need to go through? Who has the authority to stop a procedure or authorize a procedure, a medication, even which doctor I use, right? Which tests to perform? What the healthcare power of attorney really should not do is also include end-of-life documents. So that would be a different, in my system, a different document, which is a standalone end of life or what's called a living will. But it acts like a power of attorney because that living will gives instructions that if I am at a true end of life event, so in my documents, what they are is that if you have an incurable injury, disease, or illness that has rendered you permanently unconscious mm-hmm. and death is imminent, so all those three must be true, then that is a true end of life moment and what happens in the decisions you make of whether or not you want to remain on life support, whether you want a feeding tube, whether you want hydration, comfort drugs, and these types of things. Mm-hmm. So that's a different document altogether. So far we have three different kind of standalone documents, which is a financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and then a living will, or oftentimes attorneys will actually call that the durable power of attorney, which is the end of life document.
Can the same person be in all of these roles?
Yeah,
Often is, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The question is, do we want them in all of these roles? Mm-hmm. Because it's a different skill set to take care of someone's finances. And maybe it's a different skill set to be compassionate and work with doctors.
I see.
Oftentimes, the same person is put in place, but more of convenience is what I see versus a well-thought-out, well-designed plan that says, is that really the right person that we need? As a matter of fact, in preparation for today, I was kind of looking at exactly who do we put in charge. So let's kind of head to the Word for just a quick moment and take a look at some scriptures that may assist us in determining, are we selecting the right person or are we just selecting a person? Because that's a really critical part of the discussion when we assist people. Mm-hmm. Number one, Philippians 2:4 says, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. So is the individual that we are selecting who's going to be watching out after us, are they demonstrating a biblical model of already caring for other people? No. So therefore, it gives us a greater security that they will naturally, because of who they are, be watching after me, right?
Yeah.
Galatians 6:2 says, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Romans 12:10, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Okay. And then Galatians 6, verse 9 starting says, while we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people and especially those who are the household of faith. Right. So, and do not grow weary in well doing. So, Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:8, kind of a scripture that we may have heard, almost has a little bit of a rebuke in here for caring for family members, which is, but if anyone does not provide for his own and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So the whole point of what I was looking up some of these scriptures and writing them down was selecting the individual who is going to care for us, because these documents are during my lifetime, I need care. During my lifetime, I need someone who is going to demonstrate the character and quality of Christ. Do we have the right person? So whether that's a child, whether that's somebody outside the family, whether that's a friend, it really doesn't matter. But the issue here is that we don't want to select somebody just because they're a family member. We want to select somebody because they're following a biblical model of care that is demonstrated through their life, and we have a greater confidence that that's the quality of care that I will receive when I am giving someone my full power and authority.
Okay, very interesting subject this week, the power of attorney issues. If this is something maybe you're needing help with in your family, and you'd like more information and maybe to have an appointment even with Paul Grant, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Our website is always the greatest place to start. You can go to legacyandfaith.com. We have our podcasts up there from everything that we've done in the past, opportunities to come to workshops and educational events. They're held both live and live stream now. And so you can sign up for either of those opportunities as well as ask us email questions. So
legacyandfaith.com. Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant from the Legacy and Faith Show. I want to encourage you to head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. We provide educational seminars designed to give you a starting point for your estate planning needs. We discuss things like what documents are needed in every estate plan, how do I protect the next generation,
What are estate tax issues? And how do I plan for minor or special needs children? Come on over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, and discover a host of information. Sign up for an educational class or ask a question. That's at legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Planning with Purpose, the law offices of Paul Grant, is accepting applications for a part-time office assistant and is always seeking highly motivated and exceptional attorneys. If you're interested in joining a team that seeks to serve families, then go to legacyandfaith.com and use the website's email option to express your interest.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
And more of the Legacy and Faith Show. Mark Holland co-hosting once again with Paul Grant, estate and tax planning attorney, and the important subject this week of the power of attorney. Paul, you call this the POA.
That's right. Nice little initials, the POA. So powers of attorney.
Important role in anyone's estate plan.
Absolutely. Very critical. And we've covered several of them already. So we've talked about the financial, the health, and the end of life or the living will. There's just a couple others that also I wanted to throw out for listeners to consider as they deal with their estate plan. There is a separate Washington section of law that deals with mental health issues. Mm. And so I create a standalone mental health power of attorney. There are certain questions in the statute that are asked that are rather clunky. So I've noticed that you're either very intimately aware of mental health issues because you had family members, maybe even many listeners have gone through difficult times themselves personally. And so the questions would make a lot of sense to those types of individuals. And then there's some of us who have never really ever experienced family members, ourselves, or anyone else going through mental health issues. To those individuals, the questions seem to be very clunky. But Washington statute has a very clear section to say, ask these questions, and these questions will kind of govern or be the oversight to the mental health power of attorney. So in my system, we also create a standalone document with those Washington questions to ensure that guidance for mental health. Now, remember, let me try to explain what mental health is. It's that if we lose the ability to think clearly, okay, so we don't have perfect control of our minds, or if our emotions are not well settled for a period of time. And we watch individuals who may struggle with these types of things kind of go in and out of these times. It seems to be a high ebb and flow.
And this can come in any time in life, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Toward the end of life. It could be in the prime of life.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so these powers of attorney are critical for everyone to have during their lifetime. This is not a death issue. So when we hear people say, well, estate planning, we think of, well, I don't have much, and so therefore I really don't need to do estate planning. Au contraire, we really do need to do estate planning for anyone who is over the age of 18, because they become a legal adult and they need these documents that we're talking about today in place. I've said before on previous shows that the ring is no longer a legal entity that you can walk in and a spouse can just start screaming and yelling. At some point, a doctor is going to raise their hand, or the bank, if something is titled only in my name and I didn't put it in a joint account with my spouse, at some point, just because we're married, the law is going to cut you off and say, but you don't have power and authority to make the decision. So go to court and get a document, or show me the document that you already have. And so specifically with our young adults in their 20s or spouses, we sometimes think, oh, I still have authority over this person. No, we need these documents in place. So in the mental health arena, there's actually times of disability, specifically those with memory loss. And as we enter into Alzheimer's, it could greatly influence the personality of our loved one.
What about like a disabled child who's an adult now? Is that where power of attorney comes in there too? Or is that more of a guardianship issue?
Yeah, very good question. That kind of goes back to guardianship more than power of attorney. Now, if they have competency and they don't need a full-time guardian, that they have been disabled all their life. They've always needed assistance. That individual, there is probably a court order when they turn 18 that the parent has naturally gotten already.
Okay.
So the court order would protect that person.
Okay. All right.
But there's many individuals with mild disabilities that have full competency to create these documents on their own.
Okay.
And those individuals definitely need to make sure that these documents are in place.
Okay.
That they have the requisite powers of attorney so that they can get the appropriate assistance. But really, anyone 18 or over needs all these documents. So financial, health care, mental health, end of life. And then there's also another one for medical records that we would want. And then there's another last document sitting on to the side, which is if I pass away, what are my anatomical gift donations? So do I want my body to be used in some way? Or do I have a strong belief system that, no, I want to keep my body whole and I want it to be buried or I want it to be cremated. Many listeners have very strong biblical perspectives of which way they want to move this. And so therefore being expressionate about whether you want to make an anatomical gift is very important to many individuals.
So the organ donor thing that you checked on your driver's license isn't sufficient to cover everything?
It can be, but that's only one database.
Okay.
And so that is a Washington State database, and that's a very, very good point. Is yes, that's a great election, but we may want to be more expressionate in that detail. So therefore, we can create a standalone document that gives someone else power and authority to work with that agency in making our elections, so that we want clarity in all of these issues. That's the whole point, is that if we don't give ourselves a voice, then the law will take over at some point, and we're going to be in a worse position with someone who doesn't know us making a decision versus using our own voice. So estate planning always comes back to, we have to sit down and we have to have a conversation to know exactly what powers to give or take, restrict, but we have to have something that says, this is my desire.
Okay.
This is what I want done. And that's what the powers of attorney are doing. These are potentially even more important than the death instruments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, lots of different forms of power of attorney. Next question, who determines if someone is incompetent and if the POA is valid?
Yeah, great. So determining where the power of attorney becomes effective is very important. There's two type of primary powers of attorney. One is called immediate, which is I'm going to immediately make this empowered. The law looks at that and says, oh, that's a little bit stronger, because if you're willing to give your power to somebody right now, you must have trusted them implicitly. And so we're going to defer to that power to a greater degree. Mm. And there's another one that's called a springing power of attorney. And both of these are actually very commonly used. The springing power of attorney means upon a certain event that is determined by that document, if that event occurs, then the power of attorney becomes valid and it turns on. So, for example, for most spouses, we want our spouses to work freely, simultaneously, and immediately. So to spouses, we may want the power of attorney to start immediate, which says, here, have all my power right now. But if my spouse cannot act on my behalf, so let's say that unfortunately my wife and I are in that mutual car accident and we're sitting in hospital beds next to each other.
Right.
Well, now there's an event that took place. So now I may need to spring into action for whoever is after my spouse. But we can do one of two things. The most common thing is that a doctor examine us and determine whether or not I am able to make financial decisions. So that's great. At least someone is examining us, but they're going to use a very strategic medical exam that says, mm-hmm. can you pass these tests?
Mm-hmm.
Versus there is the opportunity to leave someone else in charge and make that decision. And so the springing power of attorney is, if an event takes place, if I'm examined and it's determined that I am no longer able to help myself, then the power of attorney turns on versus the immediate one is, let's just do it today. Here's all my power and authority.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other one? You said springing, and then there was another one you said?
Well, just immediate. So an immediate power of attorney versus the springing. And so those are some of the powers of attorney that every individual should be thinking about when they become in power. And then hopefully we discuss just a little bit about the quality and nature, the characteristics of somebody that you should be looking for and thinking about. Mm-hmm. It's not just because they're my kids. Are my kids going to act on my best interest? It's not just because that person is my sibling that I put them in charge. Is that sibling going to act in my best interest?
Mm-hmm.
So the who is going to be acting is really critical in this process, but we need to have the discussion. We need to sit down and get these done.
It sounds like it's mostly the medical person is the one who determines this.
Well, it can be. And specifically in mm-hmm. the springing power of attorney, mm-hmm. That is the most common. Mm-hmm. But we have a few things that we need to kind of continue. So let's talk about this for another show.
Right.
And we'll come back and kind of wrap this up with the powers of attorney, because there's more to be said.
Power of Attorney Part 2 next time on the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. If people need help in this area or any other area, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, come over to our legacyandfaith.com website. We have podcasts, and we have the opportunity to ask questions, get in contact with us. We'd love to meet you and see if we can assist you in any way you need.
LegacyandFaith.com and another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant under wraps. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at LegacyandFaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.